A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. Winter's here, although it kind of seems like winter came a little too early this season, right? We've already got all the snow. I'm probably jinxing that by even saying it. But the cold is settling in. And you may not think farmers markets when you think cold. But here in Greater Milwaukee, the markets aren't hibernating this winter. They're just moving indoors, which is great to see. So you have in the city of Milwaukee, you have a winter's farmers market at a place called The Table on Capitol Drive in the city. You have this bustling indoor market in Oak Creek at the community center. You have new winter markets in Brookfield, in Shorewood, all offering opportunities for local growers, local bankers, and makers to set up each and every week. It's just a wonderful showcase of community and entrepreneurship. Winter's markets, they're becoming weekly rituals. A lot of new families, food lovers. You can grab the fresh ingredients. You can discover new vendors. Saturdays, Sundays, all through the winter. So today on The Upswing, we're going to explore what makes these indoor markets thrive, how they help small businesses grow, especially during maybe a season that's a little slower, and why more people are turning out each year to shop local, no matter the temperature. And we have the perfect guest. Arthur Ersink is a Milwaukee area documentary filmmaker, food media entrepreneur, local elected official. He serves in the village of Shorewood. And he's also the founder and creator of the Emmy Award-winning television series, Wisconsin Foodie, which is about to drop its new season. So we get to talk about everything community and business, which is what The Upswing's all about, with Arthur. So he's going to cover it all for us, but also spotlight what's new and exciting at the Winter's Farmers Market in Shorewood. Speaking of Arthur, He lives in my neighborhood, all right? I see him out for walks often. I want to give you a little bit of a challenge as we go into the break here. It's the weekend if you're listening on Saturday or Sunday. I encourage you to take a walk in a neighborhood that isn't yours this weekend, all right? Get out of the car, walk the block, look at the homes, look at the shops, look at the people. Notice what feels different. Maybe grab a coffee at a spot that you've never seen or never tried. Say hi to people. And then bring, and here's the challenge. I need you to do this, all right? Take one idea, one new connection, one new piece of appreciation back to your own neighborhood, all right? There's amazing ideas. There's amazing energy everywhere across the state. And we're all in this together. Coming up next, Arthur Ersink, Wisconsin Foodie, and the Winter Farmers Market in the village of Shorewood. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, Wisconsin Foodie, Emmy Award-winning independent television series dedicated to discovering the stories behind the food we eat in our great state and throughout the Midwest. The founder of the show wears a ton of hats, which I love and appreciate. Arthur Ersink, he's here in studio with us today. Arthur, I appreciate your time.
Man, honored. What an intro, by the way. Thank you so much. I need you in my life more often, Jeff, because I don't get that every day. But it's awesome to hear. I really appreciate that, though. Thank you.
Of course. So for fans and listeners who don't know about Wisconsin Foodie, but you know, maybe they know a little bit about the person behind it, how do you introduce yourself? I know I gave you that introduction, but wow, you wear a lot of hats. You do a lot of things in the community. Kind of tell us about yourself.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's you know, being from Wisconsin, it's really hard for me to talk about myself in that way. You know, but you're right. wear multiple hats. And I think, you know, partly due to my ADHD, but, you know, and it's just I need to fill my life with different projects at all times. And I need to, you know, I need to try to be the best at all of them, you know, which is not an easy task. But, you know, with Wisconsin Foodie, you know, what a wild ride it's been. We started this project in 2007, 2008, okay. And we are almost, I'm not going to say it yet because we're not quite there yet, but we're 18 years into this thing.
Wow.
And that's shocking to hear, yeah. Right? You know, when you start something like that, you think, wow, if I make it, you know, 10 years, if I make it 5 years, that's incredible. But once you get to 18 years, you're like, ah, am I old? You know, like,
yeah.
Like, oh boy, you know, but, you know, the amazing thing is when we're on the road, especially when we're out with Luke, nobody knows really who I am. I'm the man of the shadows, right?
Right.
And it, kind of what you talked about earlier, you know, Wisconsin Foodie has had so many different iterations of crew people and team members over the past. We've grown really big. In COVID, we shrank a little bit. But this year, I really wanted to try to get back to the roots. You know, mm-hmm. One thing with the show is it's all about storytelling. Yeah. We're really focused on the stories. And you know, I thought this year would be a fun experiment if I went back to the roots of how things started with just me, a camera, and the host. Instead of having three guys and three camera crews, maybe a sound guy, another producer, which is where we got to, I wanted to go back to the roots and figure out, you know, what would it be like if it was just me, a camera, and the host. And so that's this new season. It's
okay.
It's a man with a movie camera. I have to say that it was just such a fantastically enjoyable experience this year. I still very much love the filmmaking portions of my business, and I mean that's why I do what I do. I love holding a camera. I love editing, you know, the pictures and the sound, mm-hmm. And you know, honestly, that's today, which is great. It's kind of like an anniversary. Today is the day that my final batch of episodes is due at PBS, and it's usually one of the most stressful days of the year,
yeah.
But I'm happy to be distracted here in the studio with you right good. Now.
So how many episodes for the new season, and kind of give us a reminder of how each show is structured then?
Yeah. So we do 13 new episodes a year,
okay.
And that has been sort of our rule book for, you know, the past 18 years. One thing that we have decided to, you know, a departure a little bit is, like we said, we've kind of seen what, you know, streaming is kind of taken on a different, you know, a different trajectory, right? Streaming now is it's kind of where people are consuming content.
Right.
And while PBS has great streaming platforms, we've really sort of dug into our Facebook, our Facebook channel, and really put a lot of energy into that. So, you know, what we've started to do this past year is just kind of get together every Monday and Tuesday of the week and start producing content, mm-hmm. and put it out there. And then, you know, ideally, once we get to the end of the season or once we get to our deadlines, we already have all this content that's kind of pushed out there that we can, you know, combine together to create these episodes. So generally an episode is it's I like to call it like jazz, right?
Okay.
The Wisconsin Foodie is like a lot like jazz. It's very they call it, like, you know, this kind of cinema verite for filmmaking, documentary filmmaking style, where, you know, we put ourselves in we know the story we want to tell,
right.
But we kind of withhold a little information from ourselves so we can discover the story on the spot. And we'll have an idea for a story, but we'll have no idea of where that story will take us. And, you know, there's times where it takes us on a whole different path than we never would have understood in the, you know, when we set out to do the story.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of times where I say to myself, hey, this is just good for YouTube. It's probably not good for PBS. And then it turns into, this might be our Emmy episode this year, you know.
How do you identify the subjects, the restaurants, and the foodies that you want to talk to for each episode?
Yeah, over the course of, you know, the time we've been doing this, we just have such a solid network of people that we rely on or that we can bounce ideas off of. But after a while, I'm sure you've been in this industry too. You just kind of know it, you know.
Yeah.
You just kind of feel it. You know, one thing I try to do with Wisconsin Foodie is stay away from what everybody else is doing. You know,
yeah.
Like a new restaurant comes out, and you've been a part of that world,
right? Well, and you look at the food space. There are a lot of food shows nationally, regionally,
yeah.
And even locally. So,
right.
I mean, you're in some way, shape, or form competing, but at the same time, it's got to drive you creatively, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, we've seen this, like, the roller coaster of food show popularity come and go a little bit, right? You know, where it's like, oh, you can't, nobody else can do a food show. It's already been done. And, like, you know, and I don't even, you know, I think it's, you know, speaking really broadly to say that we're just a food show, I think we're this, like, cultural show about the fabric of our, you know, Midwestern and Wisconsin identity. And we tell these really powerful stories of culture through food. You know, so food is the guys. Food is the entertainment for much bigger sort of stories and statements that we're trying to tell.
So give us a little tease of what to expect for this upcoming season in terms of the people that you're featuring.
So I have to say, well, you know, I mean, people are going to be – I'm going to hear it nonstop from people because whenever we do something outside of Wisconsin – we hear it. Yeah. People get mad.
Stay in the States. Come on, Arthur. You're a local guy.
But we've been, you know, as we've grown in this industry, we've been really, we've been looking outside the borders a little bit. And I have to say, I just finished one episode today that I am extremely excited about. It started off with the Seed Savers. Have you heard of Seed Savers?
I have not, no.
Seed Savers is a seed, sort of a seed company located in Decorah, Iowa. But they're... Okay. What they do is they save all sorts of different heritage and heirloom seeds. They want to create the seed bank of every sort of different seed that they can find. Hmm. And then they also sell the seeds. They invite seed swaps. They're just working with a rural community to save and to you know, store heritage seeds. So they were having their 50th anniversary this year in Decorah, and they invited Luke, our host, to come out to do a dinner to help facilitate a talk with Alice Waters and to join another chef, Sean Sherman, to help participate in this event. And so we went out there not knowing what we were getting into. And I was kind of apprehensive at first to shoot it because it was outside of Wisconsin. And and I'm not a huge fan of shooting events. There's just no soul or character there. Hmm. But what we uncovered was just absolutely incredible. From being around Alice Waters, from being around a gentleman like Sean Sherman from Awamni, who is a native chef that is promoting pre-colonial food, and also Linda Black Elk, who is an ethnobotanist and making videos about you know, using these wild foods. And I fell in love with the story. I fell in love with the place. And it turned into us then going to a restaurant in Minneapolis called Awamni, which is run by Sean Sherman. And we hung out with Chef Lee Garman and just cooked food all day. And again, this food is pre-colonial, right? Mm. So it's food that was here before we were colonized, before, you know, so there's no poultry, there's no beef, there's no dairy. It is like wild game. And what they do with on the show, we made this dish. It was a bison ribeye. Mm. And this was some of the best meat I've ever put in my mouth.
Sherman Buffalo Farm in Nora Springs, Iowa, years ago. Ooh. I'm a big fan of bison and buffalo because my grandfather was a buffalo farmer. And yes, Wisconsin foodie, getting to the heart of it each and every episode for sure. Arthur Ersink, filmmaker, entrepreneur, public servant, all the above. When we come back, Arthur, I want to talk about your service in the village of Shorewood. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio, Arthur Ersink, Wisconsin foodie, and way more. Entrepreneurism, community building at the heart of what it's all about in Arthur's world. So I appreciate you taking the time, Arthur.
Again, man, it's so great to be here.
So beyond Wisconsin foodie, you're also a village trustee in Shorewood, where we both live. So appreciate your service, for sure.
Yes.
Talk about that. You know, how you kind of evolve from just a citizen into the role of government. And then tell us what's new in the village of Shorewood.
Oh, fantastic. I appreciate that. You know, not everybody wants to hear about village politics, so I'm glad that I have this platform here. But no, so, you know, the village of Shorewood, you know, we were lucky enough as a young family to move into Shorewood about 11, 12 years ago. Okay. And when we finally got there, we had to put everything we owned into getting to move there. You know, we didn't
come.
I moved from like Walker's Point, you know, and then, you know, we lived in, you know, in the surrounding sort of like little communities of Milwaukee. And getting into Shorewood was Brewers Hill. Sorry. Okay. Brewers Hill is where we directly came from. Right. And I really love that neighborhood, too. But But when we finally bought a home and invested in the community, it was really important for me to be, to repay the love that I had for my community, and I want to give back. I've always been somebody that's volunteer-oriented, public service-minded, civic-minded, and I thought that would be a great opportunity to be a voice in Shorewood. And so that's where it began. You know, it kind of came up through food.
Okay.
You know, so when I was approached originally about, I was approached about somebody's like, hey, Arthur, we know you're with Wisconsin Foodie. Do you want to do a downtown dining week in Shorewood? And I think those words right there were the words that, like, you know, got me to the position I am today.
And you've helped run the Shorewood Feast for years, which is a marquee event on Oakland Avenue that draws hundreds of people to the street to showcase local food.
I'd like to think thousands of people, but okay. And I think, you know, so the downtown dining week question was like, do you want to do that? And I'm like, absolutely not. I hate downtown dining weeks. It's the most like non-intimate sort of generic, you know, dining experience you could ask for. But I said, how about this? How about we close down all of Oakland Avenue and have just a huge street party? And and it took us a little while, but we got that rolling. And you know, I was hoping to close a lot more of the street, but you know, I think five blocks of Oakland Avenue is pretty cool. And we have food trucks, we have music, two stages of music. You know, we have just about everything, and it's anchored by this like really beautiful dinner on the street at nighttime. And it's always a fantastic evening. I always love seeing so many smiles on people's faces, and that's really what it's about.
Yeah. And speaking of the street, that street you refer to as Oakland Avenue, that runs from the east side of Milwaukee all the way through North Shore, pretty much. That street is going to be 100% repaved and shut down in the summer. Can you give us a bit on that project?
Well, it's going to be starting February.
February,
yeah.
Okay.
So, soon. Oakland Avenue is our main sort of corridor, the main district, the main business district in Shorewood. And for those that haven't been in the community or haven't gone on Oakland and inspected, you know, the concrete with a magnifying glass, well, you don't need to, because there is just giant potholes everywhere on that street. And it is just in such terrible condition. It's an eyesore, and it's something as like a public official, it's my responsibility to make sure that our community isn't, you know, especially in our main business district, doesn't just look like, you know, it's pretty much gravel at this point. So we were planning on actually repaving it before COVID.
Okay.
Then COVID hit. We put that on pause. Then we decided that right after COVID, we were going to repave it. But then, you know, we got together and we said, you know, let's let these businesses come back a little bit, right? Let's not rip up the street right away. And then, you know, they have to suffer that. So then we earmarked, you know, 2026, February 2026 is a good date. That was far enough away. You know what? In the long run, there's never a good time for this. I mean, it's going to not be a great situation for everybody. But once it's said and done, it's going to be a beautiful street, and it's going to reflect our community perfectly.
But when you look at what's happening in greater Milwaukee in terms of road diets and streetscaping and really making it more user-friendly for the pedestrian, for public transit, for everyone, it's really important. And Shorewood is so walkable to begin that you got to do everything you can to keep it that way, right?
I'll just be open about it. Then I'm running for trustee for my third term coming up. The election is in April. And my platform was going to be golf cart community. What do you think? shut it down to cars? We'll just all golf carts?
That would be interesting.
No.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
No, I agree. I'm with you. I love the fact that our community is walkable. It's bikeable. There's so many kids in Shorewood. They're running everywhere. And it's just such an active place that we really have to – that balance is always front and center in our minds. How do we do more to protect the walkers, the pedestrians, the bikers? And, you know, at the same time, make it, you know, things accessible for car owners. Because you know what? That's not going away anytime soon. People own cars and they got to park. And but, you know, we're doing everything in our, you know, control to – like you said, create bump outs, narrow streets, create dedicated biking lanes, and just really look at that holistically in Shorewood and make it a priority.
And there's some vacant spaces along Oakland Avenue that are about to be filled too. What do you know about those spaces?
So there's one space on Oakland Avenue right now that's kind of the center of discussion in our community. It's currently a public parking lot. You know, although in my 12 years, I didn't even know that I could park in that lot. So I always find street parking pretty easily. Things may change a little bit as we grow as a community. But right now, that lot has been identified for affordable housing, which is something that we've looked at as Shorewood as a very important sort of goal for our community. If you look at rents, and I should say that there's a big difference between housing that's affordable and technically affordable housing, and that's what we're dealing with here, through WEDA. Mm-hmm. So we're looking to build, to work with a Spurl development to build an affordable housing unit on Oakland. And, we're always trying to figure out ways to diversify our community from the housing stock to the people to just about everything and encourage more. People want to come to Shorewood. It's such a big destination that, houses go up for sale and they're gone the next day. There's backroom deals for houses. It's so hard to find space to live in Shorewood. So we're doing everything we can do to create opportunities for everybody, no matter where you are on the, on your the pay scale. Yeah. It's important that we get everybody to live in Shorewood.
And another big anchor of the community that's happening across Greater Milwaukee is taking the farmer's market concept and moving it indoors for the winter. And I know you've been a part of the Shorewood Farmer's Market since day one, but the new winter farmer's market just started 2 weeks ago. So when we come back, want to hear all about that. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Winter in Wisconsin. We all know it's real. It's wonderful, too. And we can all make the case, I think, why indoor farmers markets, winter farmers markets really matter for communities like Shorewood and Greater Milwaukee. You got to take what we love in the summer and bring it indoors, a little bit more usable, but still all about community. One of the founders of the Shorewood Farmers Market, Arthur Ersink, joins us in studio. Arthur, you are a couple weeks into the brand new Shorewood Winter Farmers Market. Talk about that vision and how it's all come together.
So our summer farmers market season is just unbelievable. It just grows year after year.
Estabrook Park on Sundays, right?
9:30 to 1.
Okay.
And it is from basically Father's Day to the Halloween. Those are our earmarks.
Yeah.
And we've grown steadily throughout the years. I think we're at around 70, if not more, vendors at this point.
Yeah.
And it we close down Estabrook Park, and it's just we take over that street, and it's a beautiful thing. I call it food church. That's my food church. Sundays is my food church, and just to see the vendors, it's a big happy family, and it's so many smiling faces. The only time there's not a smiling face is when like a vendor's not there and people are upset that they're not there, right?
Like, but where's Funky Fresh Spring Rolls? Seriously. Come on, where's Truman?
My gosh, where is Truman? But no, so it is just wildly successful, and I think when we do something, as an organization, we want to do it well. We have a standard of quality that we want to implement. There's a lot to think about. And I think there's always been opportunity to try to do something in the winter, but there's so many little factors that we've got to figure out first. And and it's sort of, I'm going to say that, thankfully for another really fantastic Shorewood resident, Paul Hackbarth, who, funny enough, I think we all sit in the same buck section, right?
We all have seats very close to one another.
We don't talk.
That's community for you.
That's
community 101. That's how we stay together.
But, Paul is the owner, if you don't know, is the owner of Camp, all the different camp bars, but he also has this great space called the Atrium in Shorewood. And, it kind of struck us. It's like, well, what's happening in the Atrium, And can we use that space for the market? And, we can't take 70 vendors there, but can we fit 25, maybe 30 vendors in there? And, so we said, this feels good. Talk to Paul about it. And Paul gave us the green light and said, man, you got my blessing. This is going to be fantastic. Gave us just a beautiful deal to make it happen. He's a huge community guy and really wants to see great things happen in Shorewood. And then I think basically within a month, we put it all together and picked out our vendors. I think that selection process is always very, we're always very conscious about the selection process of our vendors.
Yeah. How do you curate that in terms of the right selection of farmers and makers in terms of just building that community with an indoor market?
Yeah, I think you know, for me, I always start at, it's a very important thing. It's something that takes us quite a bit of time and a lot of consideration to get the right mix. It's not just throw it at a wall and see what sticks. Yeah. You know, we had, well over 60 people apply to the Winter Farmers Market, and everybody has different, they can only do 4 weeks, they can do 8 weeks, maybe they can do 1 week. But we really want to make sure that there's a broad spectrum of products and people there, right? Yeah. We want to make sure that we have some farming goods, some farmed goods, pickled goods, whatever is available now.
Yeah.
But, from our special sauce is really creating – we want to create community. We want to create an environment that people want to come to and stay for a long time, And so with that said, we have people like Donut Monster. We have Love Cafe. We have, Royal Garden who's coming. They're coming with prepared foods. They're making breakfast sandwiches. They have these great Nepalese dumplings. There's things for people to come, eat, and enjoy. Not only that, we usually have live music, right?
Yeah.
So and the beautiful thing about being paired with somebody from Camp Bar is we have just these fantastic Bloody Marys made with like a lot of the products that you can find at the market.
All right. So as you're talking with farmers and makers right now, what are you hearing about costs and about their customer base? Maybe even what's like keeping them up at night? Is it different than it was a year ago?
I guess I see that more so from a restaurant standpoint of view.
Okay.
I think the restaurants, it's gotten a lot more difficult for the restaurants.
Yeah.
Just the product.
Is it a cost thing? Is it an overall economy thing? Or what are you hearing from the chefs and the owners?
It's a mixture of all of the above. Mainly it's raw ingredients. Beef prices are absolutely sky high right now. So if you are like an ethical restaurant, you want to give your employees a good living wage, you want to bring in good, good product, those costs are high. And when those costs get high for the restaurant owner, those costs get high for the consumer, and then people really start to rethink about their food choices, right?
Yeah.
For me, it's I make the investment. I feel like it's a very valuable investment to make. I look at it as if I were to go to a dinner and spend $200, what else would I spend $200 on? What if I just went out and bought some clothes, or what if I bought this or that? Sometimes an oil change. So I think making that investment in our local food community is almost a form of activism. It's a form of giving back to this beautiful local economy that's helping small farmers, small food producers, restaurant owners, and eventually, you and your family to eat a better quality product.
I think when you pair the indoor markets, the outdoor markets, the small producers, the local restaurant scene, they all support rather than compete, right? And that's what it's about. It's kind of taking that rise and tide lifts all boats approach.
Yep.
Even when things are maybe a little tougher economically, you got to have that full package, if you will, to create the scene that we all enjoy.
Yeah, that's right. And, it's hard work for restaurants to potentially source local. They've got to establish relationships with farmers, with beef producers. But those relationships are out there, and it takes a little bit more work. But in the long run, it's ultimately so much more worth it to establish those connections.
Yeah. When you look at kind of a couple of your go-to restaurants or food experiences, is there like a under-the-radar spot that you've seen that you'd really recommend for us?
I'm going to, under the radar, this is the toughest question I get, right? and I'm going to say here's what I'm going to say is whenever somebody asks me my favorite restaurant, my answer would always be the same. And it would be Beans and Barley. It's a place that I've probably eaten more than anywhere else in my entire life. And it was always very consistent. And it's just heartbreaking to know that that's going away. And now that it is going away, I can like share that with the world that was my favorite spot. But
I just walked over there from my office on the east side last week and bought all the recipe books. So I can make sure that the Sherman family keeps those burritos in our community, right? The burritos are absolutely the best at Beans and Barley.
My child is grew up on bean and cheese burritos. He's half bean and cheese burrito at this point. But, I think another place, and I like these places because I like the people mostly, I think. The food is good. But like a place like Calderon Club in San Giorgio, Gino, I have so much love for him, and I have so much love for what he does for the city. But also that pizza that they make at both locations, man, it's by far some of my favorite, anywhere hands down. But My child loves ramen and I think and Asian foods. So I think, you know, the like when we eat out, just me and him, and it's not a foodie thing, or, you know, we're always trying to find ramen, and we try different places all the time. But I think the place we always go to is Kawa on the east side. It's probably one of our favorite ramens. Really like Kawa. But, you know, there's so much ramen out there, and you know, there's something for everybody.
When we come back, Arthur Ersink, I'm going to have him put on his political hat again and answer our big 2026 upswing question. I need his agenda for the candidates running for governor. Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Arthur Ersink. In Arthur's civic life, he's helped formulate and produce the Shorewood Farmers Market. He's led the Shorewood Business Improvement District and organized the Shorewood Feast, all while chairing the Public Works Committee and serving on multiple committees in the village as he runs community-based, foodie-based businesses. He's the perfect guest on the show. I'm going to have you put your political hat back on. You're a trustee in the village of Shorewood. Upcoming in August is the primary for governor in the state of Wisconsin. All the candidates have platforms and agendas per se. If you had the chance to be a political consultant for one of the candidates, kind of lay it out for us. What's your foodie for governor platform that we need to have in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I think we need to really make the connection between our rural communities and our urban communities. That, for me, is a giant chasm, a giant void, especially with my experience driving around Wisconsin. I think, you know, there is not a week that goes by that I'm not on the road. I drive, you know, Luke Zahm, the host, lives in Viroqua, and I'm probably there every weekend, every other weekend, and driving, you know, I drive through the state more than probably many of the truck drivers. And there is just such a disconnect between Milwaukee and Richland Center, Milwaukee and you know, Rhinelander, you know, or Viroqua or Westby, you know, or Sparta. You know, there are people that don't feel connected to the city, and they feel that the cities, which is Madison and Milwaukee, are essentially taking, you know, taking things away from the people, right? They're, you know, there's too much crime, there's so much violence, and there's just a massive disconnect. So I think the next governor really has to close that bridge a little bit, close the gap, and really make that sort of these two communities, you know, come together.
The platform, unity through food.
Yes.
I like it, Arthur.
Hey.
There you go.
Yep.
There is the campaign slogan. So just to close here, remind us the dates and hours for the Shorewood Winter Farmers Market, and then when do new episodes of Wisconsin Foodie begin?
Love it. Love it. Love it. So every Sunday from 9 to 1 at the atrium in Shorewood on Capitol Drive, we are open, and you know, prepare to, you know, bring your money and hang out for a couple hours.
Because free admission, obviously.
Free
though.
Admission.
Yes.
You know, unless you ask, then it's $20.
All right. A little donation. Yes.
And then the new season of Wisconsin Foodie drops on Wisconsin Public Television February 5th at 7:30 p.m. And it'll also be on YouTube. And we are still in the mix working with Milwaukee Public Television to figure out how they want to air Wisconsin Foodie.
Very good. Arthur, I appreciate all you do in the community. All the best. And we'll see you at the farmer's market this Sunday.
Man, love it. Now I have to go back and edit. So my distraction is over. Appreciate it, Jeff.
Very
Thank
good.
You so much.
Thanks. Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Finally, really appreciate Arthur's update on road improvements, street diet, if you will, on Oakland Avenue that's coming to the village of Shorewood. So I wanted to give a little bit more background on some safer street initiatives. This week, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley announced that the U.S. Department of Transportation has awarded Milwaukee County with the third largest Safe Streets and Roads for All grant in the federal program's 2025 funding cycle. Milwaukee County is going to receive nearly $25 million to fund 67 traffic safety projects along 10 of the area's most hazardous roadways. I always say, like, creating more density, discovery, development is good for our roadways because it makes us all safer, no matter if we're walking or driving. These projects are expected to reduce fatal and serious injury crashes at targeted intersections and road segments by 25 to 50% along 10 Milwaukee County corridors of concern. A lot of sites for these dollars in the city of Milwaukee, West Allis, Glendale, Village of Brown Deer, the Village of Shorewood, that Oakland Avenue project that Arthur just talked about, and multiple Milwaukee County highways. In the city specifically, in Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee has been awarded $8 million of federal funding to target improvements along North Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and West Forest Home Avenue. The mayor saying that the investment puts safety first, especially for our kids, improves crossings, calms the traffic, and upgrades transit access on MLK Drive. Good dollars, good use, softening traffic makes community building better for everyone. I mentioned a couple shows ago that one of my predictions for 2026 was a few more national restaurant chains looking at the area. Now, sometimes there's that rub, like, I want to eat local, I want to shop local. Yeah, but the reality is some of the national chains do really well, and maybe at times pay a little higher lease rates too. So sometimes there's a good cheer to be had. Cava is coming to the area, and I hear a new First Watch. I'm going to tell you where that's going to be. Cava is a fast casual Mediterranean restaurant chain that's coming to the city of Greenfield. Former Mod Pizza space at that 84 South development, right at 8833 West Surra Lane. So look for Cava to open there. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about it. Fast casual, specializing in customized bowls and salads and pita dishes, all inspired by Mediterranean flavors. The brand has more than 400 restaurants nationwide, but this is going to be its first in the state of Wisconsin. Although I've had a couple people tell me that they're looking at other places in the area. 2,800 square feet, though, at this former Mod Pizza development in Greenfield, should be open later this summer. Another little nugget here for you, national chain restaurant news. First Watch. Have you been to a First Watch? National chain of daytime cafes will be opening at Bayshore Town Center in the former BW3 location this summer. First Watch has more than 600 locations across the country, but only five operating in Wisconsin. Pewaukee, Brookfield, Greendale, Mequon, and Oak Creek, but coming very soon to Bayshore Town Center, which is in Glendale. Look forward to that. First Watch does a great job, and it was just that one in Charlotte this summer. Really good business model. Only open till 2 p.m., I believe. So they do only brunch and lunch and obviously breakfast. That is their core. They do a great job. Truly look forward to First Watch coming to Bayshore this summer.